Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Royal Oak, Michigan. From 1998 to 2020, he was the official photographer of the Detroit Tigers. And since 2018, he's been the men's aftercare director for Grace Centers of Hope. Founded in 1942, Grace Centers of Hope is a nonprofit Christian organization committed to positively changing the lives of the unwanted, addicted, and homeless through the gospel of Jesus Christ, personal accountability, life skills education, and work-related programs. His name? Mark Cunningham. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Mark Cunningham. From 1998 to 2020, he was the official photographer for the Detroit Tigers, and since then, he's been the aftercare director for Grace Centers of Hope in Pontiac. Mark, welcome. An honor to have you.
Hello, Jack. It's great to be here, too. Thank you for inviting me to be on your show.
Can we start by you leading us in an opening prayer?
We sure can, Jack. Thank you. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for today. Thank you for your gifts and your miracles, your grace, and your forgiveness. We are thankful that you are more powerful than any of our sins or any of our mess. Continue to guide us, comfort us, nurture us, and teach us. Keep us safe and well-guided. We ask this in your name. Amen.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Your childhood, growing up in Royal Oak, your mom and your dad, please.
All right. My mom and dad were married for about a dozen years before I was born. My dad was 40. My mom was in her late 30s. And they were married for, had been married about 12 years before that. And before I was a year old, they were divorced. My mom died young, so I never really asked why. They both were very, had good moral compasses. They were both very sturdy, stable, committed parents. And so I really never saw the reason when I was young to ask that question. Neither one ever got remarried. My dad stayed in St. Clair Shores in their marital house, and my mom and I moved to Royal Oak. And so I grew up really in both households, but I spent the majority of my time in Royal Oak, went to Royal Oak Kimball High School, graduated in 1980. And so my dad worked for the news for a very long time, well over 30 years. My mom worked for the Department of the Army for a long time, and then for the city of St. Clair Shores for a long time, and then finished her work career at a company in Ferndale called Ethel Corporation. You remember on the gas pumps that used to fill it up with ethyl,
yes,
right?
Sir.
She worked there for a long time. They had a little test track in the back that used to excite me when I was a kid, mm-hmm. you know, to get to see that. So really normal parents. My mom died young. I was only maybe 25 or 26 when she passed away. And then my dad died in 2000. And so they stayed very, very committed parents, but both also, I was raised in an atheist household. So that was...
For 40 years,
for 40,
you were an atheist.
I was, very much
so. And today you're a follower of Jesus.
I sure am.
Talk about what happened.
I sure am. For 40 years, actually, my dad was a very vocal atheist. I don't want to say my mom was a vocal atheist, but she never was offered church or a Bible or any kind of faith teachings or background. Like I said, my dad was pretty vocal, kind of made it be known my whole life, don't ever get that weak, don't ever, it's not how real men solve their problems. And so I surrounded myself with like-minded people. And on the weekend of my 40th birthday, a series of events unfolded where my marriage started to dissolve. And very short after that, it would be over with. I was an only child. My parents were both passed away. And I was going to be raising two young kids on my own. And without any faith, I couldn't fall to my knees to pray. I had nobody to lean on. As an atheist, Jack, you that self-righteousness, you look in the mirror and that's your God, you know, the guy in the mirror. And life played into that for me too. It worked against me actually, because life was really good. And other than my mom passing away young, I really had no hardships or no traumas. And so it was easy for me to think I kind of was God. And as long as I was a good guy, earned a good income, took care of my family, held the door for people when they were walking through, things like that, that I was bulletproof, that nothing could go wrong. My kids would grow up and be, you know, NFL football players and fashion models, and my wife and I would grow old together in perfect health. And then, like I said, that weekend of my 40th birthday, that all changed in a very quick swoop of events, that I went from thinking I controlled everything in my life to realizing I controlled nothing. And I had a lifelong friend. At that time, I was in the printing business. I was the Tigers photographer, but more of in a part-time role at that time. They were not a great team yet, and they didn't have the need for somebody all 82 games and spring training. So it was a fill-in job for me. I was in the printing business in Royal Oak. And the man who was in the company next to me, he had a printing company as well, a different kind of printing, so we played off of each other's strengths, and he was one of the very few people that knew what was happening in my life. And very quickly into that mess, offered me an opportunity to come to church with him. Kensington Church was, he was an instrumental part of that church. I believe he still is, but he certainly was at the time. And he invited me and the kids to come there. Any other time of my life, I would have very vocally unaccepted that invitation, but I was in a bad spot. My health, my depression, everything was going downhill. And like I said, he was a sturdy friend, and I took him up on his offer and started to attend Kensington Church. I started to fall in love with the gospel. I don't have one of those stories sometimes you hear where I came home and God was sitting on my bed and he was talking to me. I don't have one of those stories. I just have the feeling and the security and the strength that I was gaining from my faith that I had never had before.
We're talking to Mark Cunningham. When we come back, we're going to ask him about his 23-year career as the official photographer for our Detroit Tigers. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Mark Cunningham. From 1998 to 2020, he was the official photographer for our Detroit Tigers. Mark, Miggy.
Miggy.
Since 1869, there's been 28 men to hit 500 home runs. There's been 29 men that have got 3,000 hits. There's only 7 that have gotten both of those. Miggy's all 3 of those, and there's only been 5 men to win the Triple Crown since 1940. Miggy is the only one on all 4 of those lists. Tell us about Miggy.
Miggy, the best hitter I ever saw, that's for sure. I grew up in a baseball household. My mom and dad, while divorced, were both very big baseball fans, so I got to go to Tiger games for a long time and a lot of baseball, and I've seen a lot of baseball players, and Miggy's certainly the best offensive player that I've definitely seen and been around. I know Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and those guys were awesome. I really never got to see them play, but Miggy was something else. Worked hard. I never saw a bigger kid. For sure. He loved playing baseball. He loved to be a friend. He loved to energize the guys around him. And so he was something else. He always called me Cunningham. Cunningham. Hey, Cunningham. So,
all
yep,
right.
Great ball
Justin
player.
Verlander. And then there was this lady in the stands named Kate Upton.
Kate Upton.
How many times did you photo her?
Yeah, a few times, actually. So Kate would come down to spring training and had a pet rescue, a pet adoption thing. And they would have events in Lakeland. And so I would photograph those for her several times and run into her many times in the postseason and spring training. So I think when Justin met her, Justin is an awfully well-known and awfully popular baseball player. But I'm not sure Justin Verlander, if he walked through the streets of China, would anybody would really know who he was. But when he met Kate Upton, I think he met his match because she was famous everywhere. And so they're a great match. Every time Justin comes into town, we always spend a few minutes in the visiting dugout talking and catching him up on things. He's always treated me very well. And again, just a great great pitcher. We talked about Miggy being a great hitter, but Verlander and his preparation, his focus, getting to see baseball from behind the scenes, seeing a guy like Verlander, who was just, especially on game day, on his start day, was very, very focused, very driven to be the best that he could be and the best that there was. And he was a great pitcher for sure. Maybe he's going to be one of the last guys who really has a chance at 300 wins. He might be.
He's got the 3,000 strikeouts.
He does.
Okay, we're talking to Mark Cunningham. Mark, you were also the photographer from 2008 to 15 for the Lions. Major League Baseball has used you around the country. How do you know when you've taken the perfect picture?
Boy, that's a great question. I think it's a hunch thing. I kind of am that way. Even in life, I'm kind of that hunch guy. You know, I have a little feeling about something. And usually when you take that picture and you look at it in the back of the camera, now digital, you can see the photo right away. You just have that feeling. I don't know how else to explain that. But you just have that. I think it's sometimes, too, when you anticipate a photo, like if you anticipate something might happen in that game and then it really does and you were on it and you have a good picture of it, I think that you always know then too that, boy, that's going to be a good picture. Because you do get those. It's a great question you ask because you do get those. I'll come home sometimes and tell my wife, boy, that I got a picture today.
All right. Is there one highlight about that 23-year Tiger career?
I think the two biggest highlights would be Sparky Anderson's induction in 2000. I did not get to work alongside Sparky when I got hired to start the 98 season. Sparky had already retired. I knew him as a fan, but I never worked alongside of him. And the Tigers were struggling in the wins and loss column at that time. And so they sent me with Sparky to the Hall of Fame induction. And to be alongside Sparky for that, those 4 or 5 days in Cooperstown. I'd never been to Cooperstown. It was at that time the biggest returning class of Hall of Famers to come back for induction. So there was, if I remember right, there was 60 plus Hall of Famers there. And Sparky is a great PR man for baseball. So everybody would come up and want a minute with Sparky. And I got to photograph and be alongside of him. So that was certainly a highlight. And then going to the Maglio home run to send us to the World Series. That was incredible. The postseason, that first postseason, was a highlight. The World Series, just the excitement, the giddiness. I think other than Pudge and Leland, I don't believe anybody else on that team had been there, and me included. And so we were all living it together, all that excitement and
jumping
all that freshness.
Jumping on the private plane.
Jumping on the
staying
plane.
Staying at five-star hotels.
Five-star hotels, yep. You know, you wake up in the morning, Lloyd McClendon. I'm not sure if he was there in 06. So Lloyd and I in the postseasons would go and have breakfast in the morning, but I don't think he was there in 06. It's been a while, but no, it was something to be on that plane and to just to be in the hotels, the excitement of the stadium. You're the only baseball game left, right, for that last 10 days or so. That's it. And so all eyes are on that series and to photograph it from behind the scenes.
We're talking to Mark Cunningham. From 2008 to 2015, you were also the Lions photographer, and they had Calvin Johnson, a.k.a. Megatron.
Megatron, yes, they did. I got that job. I was not their main team photographer. I didn't travel. I was the second guy, but still got to do all the home games. I was hired in there. A few people jumped ship from the Tiger organization and went over to the Lion organization that I worked closely with. And they called me up and said, hey, we could use one more photographer. Would you like that little off-season work? And I said, sure, I'd love that. I've always been a big baseball fan, but not necessarily a huge football fan. So I got to be on the sidelines and see it firsthand. It was exciting. It was fast-paced. It was different. And that guy, Megatron, was different than all of them. To see just his build, his physique, again, see him warming up before a game, it was incredible. And another great Megatron story is the gal that he is married to now, his wife, was my boss. And so I really got a little behind the scenes because if he had family there
now
or friends.
Now she's his boss.
Right. Now she, yes, that's right. If Brittany ever hears this, right, we know that's the truth, right? And so, yeah, and so I had a little extra closeness with him because of his, she wasn't his wife yet, but I know they were hanging out. So yeah, so Megatron was awesome too. I photographed him probably as much as anybody. You'd always shoot a guy like a Tom Brady or somebody when they came in from a visiting team. Of course, I wasn't just working for the Lions. Some of my photos were going on Getty Images as well, which is a huge stock image company, and so I was shooting the full game. So I focused on some other superstars, but to see Megatron every game, he was fascinating, incredible.
Mark, it's 1998. You're a handsome guy.
Oh boy, face for radio.
How did you ever become the official photographer for the Detroit Tigers?
So my dad was a photographer. I grew up with a darkroom in the basement of our house. He was a photographer, and I loved photography my whole life, but I never wanted to do it for a job. I thought I would lose my love for it if I did it for a job. But two things I loved to photograph were the Detroit Zoo. I lived in Royal Oak, so we went to the zoo all the time. I loved taking my camera to the zoo, and Tiger baseball games. I always took my camera, whether it was a cheap little disposable camera or as I got a little older, a little nicer camera. And if I'd get a great picture, that's back in the 80s and the 90s when there were baseball card shows everywhere around, you know, around Oakland County and around this area. And there was always a Tiger player there, and usually for free or a couple bucks. So if I got a really cool picture at the ballpark, I'd make an 8x10, I'd take it to the card show, get it autographed, hanging on my wall. People will see it. Hey, that's a cool photo. You got it signed. Yeah, it looks nice. And so that's how I loved photography. And back in 1997, probably late summer of 1997, my brother-in-law, Pat, and my son and I, my son was about 2.5, so probably still in a stroller, went to Gibraltar Trade Center in Taylor. And they had a baseball card show there, and a player, his name's Justin Thompson. He was a left-handed pitcher for the Tigers. And he was there signing. And one of my favorite pictures is a picture of him. Just in a full, you know, wind up, and they're in the old Negro League uniforms. They wear those once a year, and he's got that old uniform on, and I just love that picture. And here he is going to sign. So I make a few 8x10s. My brother-in-law and I throw my son in the car, and we drive out to Gibraltar. And this was the one in Mount Clemens, the Gibraltar Mount Clemens. And so we get out there, we get in line, and up at the table, you know, the ball player would always be up there, and he'd usually have a handler with him, right? So you get up there, and he's helping you get your baseball out of the box or the cards out and slide them over to the ball player. And so I throw the pictures up there, and he looks at them. He says, "Hey, these are nice. Where'd you buy these?" And I said, "I took them." And he said, "Are you a photographer?" I said, "No, I am not." I said, I like to do it, but, you know, just for a little, just a hobby. And so he said, "Well, those are really good." And so he slides them over to Justin to sign. And Justin looks at him and says, "Man, that's awesome." And I said, "Well, there's an extra one there if you want to take it." He said, "Okay." Well, the guy next to him says to me, "Hey, we're going to be done here in about 15 minutes. Hang out. I want to talk to you about something." I said, "Okay." So we hung out and went in a little back room. Well, that was his personal rep, like kind of a marketing agent, I guess you'd call him a little bit. And he said, "You know, I've got 5 or 6 of the Tigers in my corral, and none of them can get photos. We can't get photos from the Tigers, from Major League Baseball." This is before digital, so it's when you had to make a print and everything. And he said, "If I got you photo passes for a few games at the end of the season, would you shoot my guys? I'll tell you who they are. You don't have to develop the film or anything. Just I'll give you a couple $100. You give me the film, I'll get it developed. You do me a big favor." And I said, "Sure." So I do that. I go down. I'm on the field at Old Tiger Stadium shooting pictures of 4 or 5, 6 guys, give them the film, don't hear from them. And then Halloween time comes, end of October of that year, and he calls me up and said, "Man, I just want to let you know you did me a solid. Like, these pictures are awesome. The guys love them, going to make prints for their families for, you know, Christmas presents and hang them in their houses. Like, this was a big deal. Thank you. You want to do it again next year?" I said, "Maybe. We'll see." He said, "If you do, let me know." Okay. Time goes on, and the Tigers were in an event with him, and their photographer was leaving. And he said, "Hey, I know a guy," kind of thing. They get a hold of me. His name was Tyler Barnes at the time. He was the director of the PR department. And he had a guy that worked for him, Giovanni Loria, and they got a hold of me. "Hey, you want to come down and talk about, you know?" And I'm, "Nope, I don't. I got a young family. I've been where I'm working at the printing company for a long time. Nice vacation. I don't want to switch careers." And I just come down and talk to us. So I went down in January of 98, and I left there the photographer. So, yeah.
And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. Yeah.
We're talking to Mark Cunningham. When we come back, we're going to talk about the newest chapter of his life.
Okay.
In the hole of the donut.
Yeah.
The center of the donut.
The center, yeah.
Pontiac, Michigan.
That's right.
And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Mark Cunningham. Today, he's the Director of Donor Relations for Grace Centers of Hope in Pontiac, which was formed in 1942. First, a minute or so about Pontiac.
All right, Pontiac, Michigan, it's the county seat of Oakland County. Back in the early 1900s, it was thriving. If you drive through some of the old neighborhoods, you see those giant, beautiful houses. There was a lot of money in that city because of the car industry. And then, just like Flint and Detroit, Pontiac, the car industry's moved out, and the community suffered, and the neighborhoods suffered, the people suffered. And so Pontiac is starting to come back now. Certainly there's we call it Little Grace Village. There's a part of Pontiac, Wyoming, where we have purchased and brought back to life 60 homes. We're working on house number 60 now to help the city, bring back the city. And so Pontiac is still struggling, but it's certainly coming back. They're going to have a new mayor soon. We don't know who that's going to be, but hopefully they continue on a forward path. And that's where I've landed for the last 7.5 years, from a baseball dugout to Pontiac, Michigan.
Grace Centers of Hope, founded in 1942, 83 years in existence. Its mission, it's a nonprofit Christian organization committed to positively changing the lives of the unwanted, addicted, and homeless through the gospel of Jesus Christ, personal accountability, life skills education, work-related programs. Years ago, I had Pastor Superman on.
Kent Clark.
Kent Clark.
Not Clark Kent, right? Ken Clark.
Yes. And he was in charge of Grace for 20-plus years. Yep. Talk about him, if you will.
Yeah, 30-plus years, actually, a long time. So, as we heard, I'm a baseball photographer, over 20 years deep, and one off season, I have three children. My life revolved, I didn't work in the off season, so my family life revolved around baseball. So my three kids played fall and winter sports, football, cheerleading, volleyball. And so I could always be there and be part of that stuff for 4 months until spring training started. And then in October of 2017, all three of my kids had moved out. They moved to Madison Heights. One bought a house in Madison Heights. One went to school in Grand Rapids. One was finishing up school at Albion. And I was going to spend 4 months alone at home. And that doesn't really go well with me. So my wife had been working at Grace in an off-campus daycare. So the old daycare wasn't on campus. And so she was off campus. I had 4 months off. And she and a few other people suggested, hey, why don't you volunteer at Grace Centers of Hope? And I didn't know much about it. Even though she worked there, I just didn't know anything about it. And I thought, well, homeless and addiction doesn't sound that attractive to me to want to go work there. And I'm not proud of that fact, but I did feel that way. And a few people said, no, you need to do that. And then I realized I had taken way more from this world than I had given back. And so I thought, I'm going to do that. I'm going to work there for these 4 months. I probably won't do it again because I'll find something else to do next time, next off season. And I walked through those doors as a photographer. I worked almost full time, 5 days a week, 6-8 hours a day. And I fell in love. I fell in love with the residents. I fell in love with their stories. I fell in love with Pastor Clark. He took me under his wing. He saw something in me that I didn't see at the time. I think he saw that I was going to be there for a while. I don't know how, and I don't know why, but he knew. And so I was alongside of him for many years, many, a great leader, a great friend, and a great mentor.
You mentioned in passing that you've renovated, Grace has renovated 60 homes, I think, on Seneca Street in Pontiac. What do you pay for them, and how do you renovate them?
Yeah, so the majority of those 60 homes are in four streets in Pawnee. There's four streets that surround our women's center, our women and children's center in the daycare. It's Seneca, Moreland, Perry, and Fairgrove. And the majority of the homes, not all of them, but the majority are on those streets. And many of those homes were purchased from the Oakland County tax auction for $10, $60, and brought back to life. Almost every house we get is a total redo. You know, they're gutted, they've had fires, parts of roofs are missing. The house we're renovating right now, number 60, the 7 years I've been at Grace Centers of Hope, that house had no windows in it. So you can imagine what that house looked like inside. And so we renovate them. The majority of the renovation work is done by men in our program, men that are either in the program or have graduated and now they're employees in the facilities department of Grace. We still hire a little bit of outside trades for like cement work and things like that, but so much of the work is done by our men. And also the money that it takes, some of these houses cost $200,000-$300,000 to renovate. And that is that all that money, we accept no government money at Grace, none. It's $8 million a year budget. And so that money comes in through donors, through sponsors, through whether they're individual families or their businesses, Pepsi, General Motors, Home Depot, the list goes on and on. And by the time everybody gives, whether it's furniture, appliances, hardy board, siding, roofs, electrical work, furnaces, by the time it's all done, we have a beautiful new home that's revitalized and then a family or men and women that move into it.
How do you decide which family or which people move in, and what do you charge them?
So, being that we have so many of the homes, we've set up a lot of homes in different structures. We have a family house, right? So we have houses that just are going to be families. We have houses that are just for women with children. We have houses that are just for maybe young married couples, no kids. You know, they just got married, husband and wife. They get a small flat somewhere. Some of the homes are for single men, single women. And how we decide is usually on a seniority basis. When they graduate, Grace is a one-year program. So they come in it's a residential program. It's not a warming center, so they come into Grace Centers of Hope for a year, revitalize their life, get healed from the inside out, right? Their physical health, their mental health, their educational health, their spiritual health, and then they're offered the opportunity to move in what we call aftercare, and that's where those houses come into play. And it's $475 a month for a single person to move into an aftercare house. All your utilities are included. It's a very gradual step into adulting. And for many of our residents, it's the first time. It's the first time they're going to pay rent. It's the first time they're going to have an honest job, because to move into aftercare, you have to have a job, a full-time job. You have to have a bank account. We have a on-staff financial planner. So all the aspects, all the bases get covered. And then they start their journey into aftercare, into the home, and we offer them 2 years of aftercare, that they can live for 2 years. And then the beauty of the program is, of those 60 homes that we've purchased and renovated, 26 of those homes have now been sold to the residents that were living in them. So imagine that truly that program is homelessness to home ownership. You know, that family or that man or that woman came to Grace maybe 3 or 4 years prior to that, broken, homeless, out of money, out of drugs, out of alcohol, out of love, out of support. And now they're do a one-year program, 2 more years of aftercare. They're working, they're sturdy, they're stable, their faith is healthy, and they're accountable, they're happy, they're excited to be alive, and now they qualify and they want to purchase one of those homes. So they've gone from homelessness to home ownership. And I don't know of another place like that. Not only in Michigan, but anywhere. I've never heard of another place of that magnitude like that.
We're talking to Mark Cunningham, and he's singing the praises of Grace Centers of Hope.
I'm
Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble.
The great Ernie Harwell.
My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God.
And the voices of our generation.
I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis.
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Mark Cunningham, the Director of Donor Relations for Grace Centers of Hope. If you want to learn more, www.gracecentersofhope.org. Gracecentersofhope.org.
Yep, got to put that S in there.
April of 2016, the William A. Davis Women's and Children's Center opened. Talk about that center.
So that was just before me, before coming there. But what that allowed us to do was, before that opening up, all the women and kids were in what we now is the men's mission, the main building on 35 East Huron Street, had everybody in it. And that building that the William A. Davis Women and Children's Center is in was our church. And so everybody would walk down to church on Wednesday and Sundays, and that's how that building was utilized. And then for a lot of the listening audience, I'm sure many people remember an old nightclub in Pontiac called Clutch Cargos. It was pretty famous or infamous, depending on how you want to see it. And they sold us that church. A donor bought that church for us and renovated it. And when that church came back to life as a church, as Grace Gospel Fellowship, which it is today, it allowed us to take that William A. Davis building and turn it into, instead of our church, turn it into the Women and Children's Center. So there's 106 beds in there for women and kids. It's like, I love to say in the evening, that building's like the movie Night at the Museum. It just comes to life. That building is so full of miracle and rejuvenation. I love going down there. I love seeing it, the kids and the moms in the parking lot. I talked earlier about my wife working at the old off-campus daycare. Now that in the parking lot was an old Teamster Hall. They sold us that building, and about 6 years ago, in December of 2019, it opened up as our Hands of Hope Daycare Center. Over 70 kids in there, and so it's just a beautiful campus. It's a beautiful building, that William A. Davis Women and Children's Center, filled with miracles.
$8 million plus budget.
Mm-hmm.
56,500 nights of stay. You feed 170,000 people. If there's a listener that says, Mark, I need help.
It's as easy as calling up. You just call Grace and ask for the intake. If you're a woman or a woman with kids, or if you're a man, you just call and ask. If you're a man, ask for the men's intake. If you're a woman, women with kids, a family, call the women's intake coordinator. Just call the number 248-334-2187 and just ask for the intake coordinator. 248-334-2187. And ask, you can go online. There's information on there too. They'll do a little phone interview. We do have a screening process. We do have a little bit of a waiting list as well. And so that's how it starts. And I tell you what, for somebody who's struggling, who's homeless, who's addicted, who's lost, spiritually lost, physically lost, just broken, it's a place of filled with miracles. I don't know how to talk any grander about the program. And you're right, $8 million a year budget comes from just the good old American way of people helping people. No government money.
Wait a minute, Cunningham. you made a statement filled with miracles. Are you telling us that miracles happen today?
Oh, boy, right? Just, you know, I talked a little bit about being an atheist for 40 years of my life, and looking back now and seeing what were miracles that I thought were just good luck. You know, if you're an atheist, I think you believe in luck, good luck or bad luck, and there is no luck there. It is Christ-centered. God's hand is everywhere in that campus and in that building. I've seen more miracles in the last 7.5 years in that campus than I've seen my entire life. The rejuvenation is incredible. And it's led now, we talked about Pastor Kent Clark. Pastor Clark retired in January. His son-in-law, Darren Weiss, so Pastor Weiss has stepped into the role. He's not only the CEO of Grace Centers, but he's also the lead pastor of Grace Gospel Fellowship, just like Pastor Clark was, which is his father-in-law. So he's had a great mentor, and he is moving us into a direction that is just exciting. It's fresh, where there's so many more chapters to unfold under his guidance.
Mark, whenever I've had a talk to a person that's worked with the poorest of the poor, third world country, etc., they say this: I've learned much more from the poor than I ever did from the rich.
Absolutely.
So you were around these megastar athletes, you know, Tigers owners, etc., etc. Please.
Yeah, my, you're right. I've spoke about this a lot. My life in baseball was surrounded by millionaires or possibly billionaires, and I certainly learned a lot from them, good and bad. But I was around them. I saw how they worked. I saw their passions. I saw their lifestyles, and then coming to Grace Centers of Hope and being surrounded by a lot of people that are coming there broken, empty. Completely empty, and watching the growth and the excitement and the rebuilding, I have learned more, gained more respect, more trust, more love for the residents that I've been surrounded by than anything else I know other than my own family.
Mark Cunningham, you and your teammates at Grace Centers of Hope are miracle workers every day. Keep up the great, great work.
We sure will, and thanks for this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.